Okay. Here we are. We're moving now from the season of Trinity towards the season of Advent to prepare ourselves for Christmas, of course. And the focus of the lectionary narrows in on who is Jesus and what is his gospel message. And thus we have this reading from Colossians 1 that is known for its Christological themes. And so Paul says to us, the gospel, the word of truth, has come to you, and its very fruit is growing in you, and is growing in you, has taken place since the day you heard it and understood God's grace and all the truth. Now notice what Paul is here saying. It is one thing for the gospel to be presented to you and to hear about it. It's another for it to come into your heart, soul, and mind. Now, why does Paul talk about the gospel like that? Why does he not say, somebody has come and explained the gospel to you? Now, of course, that does happen. But for Paul, there is another sense, or at least step, in which the gospel comes to and into you. Why does he say this? Well, he knows that it is very easy to hear about the gospel, and frankly, this happens to both laity and weak clergy, but not really get it. If that is true, then how do you know you truly get the gospel? Well, the text, today's text offers us four tests. Test one. First, is Jesus and his gospel message a joy to you? Is it actually good news, a joy to you? Now, where does it say that? Well, Paul says, when you heard of the gospel, there was hope sprung up for you. Now, the Greek word for gospel means literally a joyful proclamation or good news. And so with this in mind, let me apply this practically. When you think of your Christian life, do you think of it as a task or a burden? Do you see your Christian life primarily about reining in your passions, needing to say your prayers, having to go to church every Sunday, worried about how much money you give away, or concerned whether you're helping the poor and needy enough? Now, all those things are good, and frankly, a little bit of guilt in these areas is not necessarily a bad thing. But if doing these things is just a burden, you're not quite getting the gospel. In one of C.S. Lewis's famous sermons, The Weight of Glory, he says, most Christians assume the greatest Christian virtue is denial and sacrifice. Now, he does not deny, and rightly so, that these things are part of the Christian life. But the primary virtue for the Christian to seek after, says Lewis, is joy. Joy. And the Bible supports what he says. What is the reaction when Jesus was born? Great, great joy. What was the reaction of the first eyewitnesses of Jesus' resurrection? Again, joy. Anyone who has truly understood Jesus and his gospel, the response has always been joy. Here is another test. Paul says, the word of truth, the gospel, is bearing fruit and growing. First, Paul says the gospel is the word of truth. Now, on the one hand, the gospel is a set of coherent propositions, doctrines, dogmas that you must believe. And if you believe these gospel propositions, you must reject any other ones that are opposed to it. Although we're not very good at that in the Anglican Church these days, but it's true. But that is not all. The word of truth, Paul says, is also should be bearing fruit and growing in us. Now, how does it do so? It can do so because the word of truth of the gospel has power in and of itself to change your life. Now, what does Paul mean by fruit to try and understand this changing? He is referring to internal character revolution. For instance, in Galatians 5, Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit. Now, what is the fruit? It's labeled as love, joy, peace, patience, self-control, etc. So look at your lives right now. If you are primarily experiencing distress, anger, or bitterness, it probably shows that you are lacking the fruit of joy. If you are experiencing discouragement, that shows you lack the fruit of the first one is fruit of love, and this one is the fruit of joy. If you're overly anxious, that means you have not received the fruit of peace. All our problems come from not experiencing this kind of character transformation that Paul talks about in this fruit of the Spirit. Let me apply this by saying this. You know deep down, frankly, that you need this. Why? You get into trouble when you believe your outside is greater or more important to you than what's going on inside. In other words, you may do a good job portraying the kind of person you want others to see, but how are you doing on the inside? How is your anxiety level? Are you joyful? Does life seem just hard? Are you always thankful? Or do you always complain about other people and your personal situation? Do you always compare yourself with others? Or, when good things happen to other people, are you happy for them? Paul gives us the exact opposite picture of life by giving us this amazing insight into how he became the person he was. Where did he get the courage, the steadfastness, love, and ability to influence so many people? Paul tells us in verse 29, "For this I toil and I struggle with all the energy that Jesus powerfully inspires within me." Paul's inside, so to speak, his soul, his heart, and his mind are being transformed by the power of the gospel. For Paul, his inside is greater than his outside, the exact opposite of how we tend to live our lives and what is often communicated to us in our culture. For Paul, he would say things like, "I do not care about what I look like to others on the outside, but I know who I am and I know what I am living for." Here's another way of looking at it. When you sit down with someone who's pouring out their heart to you, how do you respond? You're going to respond in two ways. And this happened to me numerous times where I was at Pusey in Oxford, where these students a few times poured out their hearts to me about their life situation. One, you can be detached. And you may, you know, you'll pretend you look like you're listening, but deep down you're detached and you're rather uninterested. You don't want to engage. Or you do engage and then bind yourself to what that person is telling you and feeling. And when you do that, what happens is you get drained. It talks about that. There's another version of the story, the gospel story today, when the woman touches the edge of Jesus' robes. And in the other version, it says that power has gone out of me. What is my point? My point is you cannot change anybody else or be of impact to anybody else, a needy person especially, unless you engage that person and then let that person be prepared to drain you. But if you're going to do that, internal changes have to happen with you. If you just say, "Well, I'm just going to do that," well, you're not going to last very long. You'll get drained in a hurry and you won't have the resources. Internal change has to happen, as it did with St. Paul. Third test, the gospel is grace. God's grace is a synonym for the gospel. Now, what is the gospel? The gospel tells us in verse 5 that we have a hope laid up for us in heaven. Now, the words "laid up" means saved. What is saved for you in heaven? It is described as glory in different parts of the Bible, as a crown, peace, joy, etc. And here's the point. The gospel is not a race. As if, you know, if you win the race, you then will be rewarded. Heaven is already your reward. Like a crown, glory, peace, joy. It's already yours. You do not have to earn it. It is a gift in faith. And someone who gets the gospel, says Paul, is someone who not only has heard it, but has truly comprehended this grace of God. What does it mean to truly comprehend it? Well, for Paul, the gospel, God's grace, is like a well that is bottomless. The gospel is a gift that just keeps on giving. It always, always has more to teach you, makes you change, and more changes to make in you, more solutions to your problem, and an endless amount of joy. Here's another test for you then. determine whether you understand the gospel is about grace and what he offers you is endless. Consider how your approach to how do you approach your life? Is it always a referendum on your value? Are you always upset with yourself, anxious and angry? When you feel this way, it is because, frankly, you do not get the gospel as grace, as gift. So the gospel is joy, it's power, it's grace, and lastly, and most importantly, it is Christ himself. Throughout the first chapter, Paul says, I proclaim the gospel, but at the end of the chapter, he says, I proclaim him, Jesus Christ. What does that mean? The reason the gospel is joy, has power, and is grace, because Jesus Christ is Christianity. Jesus Christ is the gospel, and he is grace. The gospel is not about Jesus, the gospel is Jesus. Other religions say, here's the way, but Jesus says, no, I am the way. Other religions say, here's the truth, follow it, and Jesus says, I am the truth, follow me. Other religions say, here is how to be a righteous person. Jesus says, I am your righteousness. Throughout the Old Testament, people responded and say, I have Jesus, but also I need circumcision, the law. I need this much money, or I need to be a good person. And Paul responds to people who say this always this way. All your problems come from you saying, but also. From saying, but also. If you say, I have Jesus, but also, which is very easy to do in our culture, then you may know about Jesus, but you do not know him and following him. All right, but I don't want to leave you in despair over this, because every single one of us, including myself, struggles with wanting to say, but also. And we do sometimes, let's face it. So what can we do? Does that mean we absolutely don't get the gospel? Not necessarily. Because let's remember the gospel again is grace, and it is Jesus. And therefore, he does not expect our perfection, but he does demand our allegiance. And here's my point. Take your struggles to him, particularly your struggles, whatever that but also is in your life that is controlling you. Take those but alsos to him in prayer. And then over with time, you can just say Jesus without the but also. Amen.